Attention, FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your morning show prep begins now.
And 4 seconds after the hour of nine, in this, the month of April, the year of our Lord 2005. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Live, I say, live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of Max 910, Talk Radio for Guys. Here by the feces filled Willamette River in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, it's the Rick Emerson Show. We thank you for coming by. It is Friday. Friday, we are here. We are live, unlike almost everything else on your radio dial at this particular time. 503-535-9100. If you're inside Portland, Oregon. If you're elsewhere, it's 1-877-535-9100. 1-877-535-9100. If you want to email today, you can do so. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. By the way, if you're one of the people who won our Sin City tickets yesterday, you are morally obliged to call and or email in with your review. Tell me what you thought about that. We had, four or five pair. I think we sent 10 people to see that. The midnight screening last night. Thanks to our good friends at Regal Cinemas. So if you went to see Sin City last night at midnight, whether you won the tickets for us or not, frankly, we want to hear some early reviews of that. Scott Daly from FilmFever.org is going to be here later on today. He'll have, because he saw it on Tuesday, but it's kind of like it's like an embargoed thing. I think it was where the studio didn't let the actual review come out until the day the movie opens. So Scott Daly from FilmFever.org is going to be in his house, as the kids say. Later today, you're talking about Sin City. What else do we have? I know this is not really a thing you think you'd typically hear, but we have a fantastic Pat Buchanan story. And it's not really something that, we say all that often. But when you hear the other ingredients, so to speak, in the story, it'll all become very clear. Let's see. The Vatican will continue to insist that the Pope is not dead, which he clearly is. I don't mean any disrespect to the Holy See, but he's dead. He's dead. Now, they may not have announced it yet. He may be sitting on ice next to Walt Disney and Dick Clark's head somewhere.
It says here, the Pope's breathing has become shallow. His kidneys have ceased to function.
He is calm and serene, though, looking forward to the warm embrace of Jesus. So he's got that going for him. What else? Oh, hundreds of sharks are heading towards an American state. We'll tell you which one later on. We'll have... I don't know if this counts as the worst song ever or not. I have the one of the most ridiculous pieces of music, and it's brand new, and it's not a joke. It's a song that we heard playing on a radio station last night that I went and tracked down a copy of. It's about the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. So we'll play it later on today. We got this. We're not going to get to this. I'm going to tease it right now, although we're not going to get to it. We got this, the latest installment of the Great American Pop Culture Quiz from Entertainment Weekly. This one is all film-oriented. I'd like to get to it today. I just don't know that we're going to. We have a double snuff watch. It turns out that comedian guy is dead. Harvey Edgerton, or whatever his name is. Mitch Hedberg.
He was really funny. That's very disappointing.
Well, and he was an Almost Famous. You know, the tiny bit part in Almost Famous. He played the Eagles' road manager, which... So I just... Yeah, I feel like I'm out of touch because I hadn't heard of him. So we got him, and that's half of the snuff watch. We have a double snuff watch today. Darwin watch today. What else? Job watch. All of that coming up. Plus, we'll do, because it is Friday, and Friday is sort of leftover day, we have a large installment of Rick's Random Crap. We'll try to get to that as well. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely Sarah X. Dillon. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing swell.
You on top of the world?
Never felt better.
Ready to go take on all humanity?
Oh,
all
right. Boy,
well, you're going to see Sin City tonight, aren't you?
Yes, my nerdy boyfriend is dragging me there. Now, he's been counting down the days.
Now, did you forbid him to go to the midnight screening last night?
Is that
the deal?
Okay.
Yes. Because I know that I've been up... Because he sent me hundreds of tear-stained emails begging for tickets to the Tuesday... to the Tuesday's... And then the midnight screening last night. And I just... I know that that wasn't a thing I was allowed to do.
That wasn't in the cards.
Because you wouldn't have been able to go, and I know that he wasn't. It's one of those things where he's not allowed to go without you.
Well, I wanted to see it, too, and it seems kind of pointless to have him see it first if we're, you know, both going to eventually see it.
There's a big, I would encourage people who are interested in the film, check out USA Today, the purple section, today's installment of USA Today. There's a huge, it's like a three-page article on Sin City, which is not a flawless movie. A couple minor points that I quibble with about it, but they're like moles on the shoulder of a beautiful woman. Doesn't even matter. It's so far and beyond anything else that's come out this year and anything else that's probably going to come out this year that... So, see you tonight, see you this weekend. Do whatever you have to do to get the money. Tim Riley is in the Max 910 newsroom working on the following stories today.
So, we just received word that now the Pope's blood pressure has worsened. We'll have more talk about deaths, America's newest obsession, but it'll be Terry Schiavo free. An Oregon City speed demon has a message just for the kids, and Miss Wheelchair Wisconsin is tossed from his throne, or her throne.
All right. All right, so all of that is on the way. We have Jolie, who's going to be here with How Chicks Think. We'll do it in the 10:30 hour. We'll do today's top five a little early. We'll do it around 10:30 because things are already beginning to pile up. We're only 8 minutes into the show. We're already dreadfully, fantastically, unbelievably, hugely behind. So here is what we're going to do. In just a moment, we'll roll the Man Song Friday style as we always do. Tim Riley will come back with the 9 o'clock news. We'll have the double snuff watch. We'll have Florida news for you today. We'll have the job watch. We'll have a Darwin watch coming up. We'll take a look at the Pope's ever-debilitating so-called health. We'll have the top five. We'll talk to Jolie with How Chicks Think. We'll welcome Scott Daly from FilmFever.org and all of that stuff. Here is Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It's the Man Song live from Portland. It's the Rick Emerson Show on Max 910. You stay right there. We continue next.
Hey! What makes a man? Is this the power in his hand? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a man, 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 a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man. Now you're a man. Makes a man, is it the woman in his arms? Just 'cause she has been
given the money that I owe you.
Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the...
It's brilliant!
Now you're a man!
Tim Riley returns to rock your lame asses in just a moment with the 9 o'clock news. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this.
Want to talk to Rick? Call now. In Portland, it's 503-535-9100. Outside Portland, it's 1-877-535-9100.
Get it? She doesn't watch TV because there's nothing on the tube. On the tube. Get it?
Yes, yes, we get it.
All right, 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. If you want to email today, it's rick@rickemerson.com. It is Friday. And we have all manner of things on the way. Let's get underway with Tim Riley, the Max 910 newsroom.
It's news that hurts. With Tim Riley, only on Max 910.
Okay, so this is changing by the moment. So here's all the chicken scratch that I have on the Pope's health. Quote, notably compromised. That's the latest. He's had a heart attack. He has breathing problems, kidney failure, blood pressure. But other than that, things are fine. According to a Vatican spokesman who spoke early this morning.
Isn't tranquility and serenity because he believe.
Is he like a Pope impersonator?
Sustain him. His hope sustain him.
There's some church guys.
Is the Pope catchy or something? Is that... Well, that's the official Vatican statement.
Okay. Well, thanks for...
You want to hear it again?
Thank you.
Yeah, can we play that one more time?
He's in tranquility and serenity because he believes and his faith sustains him, his hope sustains him.
Is it so hard to get somebody who can actually speak English clearly? Is that so difficult in 2005? The name of all that is holy on this fading planet of ours.
And maybe the Pope's not in charge.
And I like how they won't just admit that the Pope is dead. They keep insisting he's not dead, and yet they've kicked off like 98% of his body systems, which have failed or are failing substantially somehow. Which is a bit like saying, if you don't have an engine, if you don't have a carburetor, if you don't have any wheels or a steering column in your car, yet somehow the vehicle is running smoothly. This is what
public transportation.
Sure.
Oh, and one more thing. He has a urinary tract infection, which Dr. Mark Rosen speaks of.
The urinary tract infection, unless there's burning with urination, the patient should be comfortable and be experiencing no pain. In addition, the septic process itself might sort of cloud the consciousness and make one more sleepy.
So it's a blessing.
Okay, so really what he needs to do here is lots of cranberry juice, Pope. This is the thing that I've learned. It's cranberry juice. Isn't that the thing for the uterine... Isn't that the thing? There you go. So there you go. If Cosmo has taught me anything, it's how the Pope can get over this sort of urinary infection.
Ray Flynn, the former mayor of Boston, which is full of Irish Catholics, and ambassador to the Vatican, the former ambassador, speaks about the Pope.
Never met a man in my life, and I've been around politics for over 40 years. I've never met a man in my life that is so prepared to die as this man. It's a kind of a strange thing to say, but this man has walked the walk, and he's carried on the mission of Christ over all these years, and he feels ready.
He's slumped the slump.
He's teaching us all to die.
Okay. Well, do we get to hear Nutcase William O'Donohue talk?
Yes,
at any
we
point?
Do. As a matter of fact,
fantastic.
He's next.
Fantastic. Look, see,
but you'll be shocked what he talks about.
How well do I know the American news cycle? Yeah.
Yep. That's the way I think. Well, it's time to think about who the next pope is going to be. The Catholic League head William Donohue speculates on who that might be.
Don't forget, you have 119 cardinals to be voting. That there's 119 who are under the age of 80. This pope is appointed more than 95% of them. I like that. The fact of the matter is that I think that, I don't know who the next pope's going to be, but I'll tell you one thing, he's not going to be 58. My guess, you'd probably get some guy maybe around 70s. And the reason I say that is I think... they're going to have to rethink the direction where they want to go in. Obviously, the next pope will be stylistically different from this pope. This is the media pope, the world traveler.
He'll be a break
but
dancer.
In terms of changing teams...
Will he be Italian?
It'd probably be an Irishman.
Really?
No, get out. They would never hire an Irishman. And the way the Americans handled the sex scandal, they're not exactly... You know, they're probably in last place, okay? They're probably in last place.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have any choice but to get anybody who's 70 years old. There's nobody young in the Catholic Church anymore. The Catholic Church, and I can say this, is somebody who attended a very sparsely populated midnight mass in a city with one of the biggest Catholic populations in the country, at one of the oldest Catholic churches in the country, just a few months ago. There's no one left in the Catholic Church who's under the age of 45. And most of the people left in the Catholic Church who are very active are over the age of 55. That's just the way that it is. And nothing to do with being opposed to religion or Christianity, but Catholicism is...
Well, people become more religion when they get closer to death.
Well, that's the thing. The older you get, when, as William Holden says in Network, when death becomes a definable thing to you with perceptible thing to you with definable features, one starts to cling more fervently to the hem of the garment of Jesus. And secondly, the Catholic Church just is not responsive to or in touch with the needs of the people in this world, especially American people, which is why they're drifting away and going to sort of... they're going to sort of more younger, high... They're going to startup religions at this point. Because the Catholic Church just doesn't give people what they need anymore. And so the only people who are really fervent Catholics at this juncture are either people in the third world, where they just don't know any better.
And people live in poor neighborhoods like St. John.
Exactly. Yeah, people here who are somehow financially dependent upon the charity of the church. People have 75 children because the church forbids them to use birth control, thus in turn making them financially dependent upon the same church that is partially responsible for their poverty. Or it's our grandparents who are 80 years old and are Catholic just because that's what they've always been. Those are the people who are in the Catholic Church at this point. The Catholic Church is not going to go away today or tomorrow or in the next 50 years, but the Catholic Church, make no doubt about it, is in the last stages of its existence, not unlike the Pope. We're going to get a new pope, but the church will never change.
But as far as changing the church's teaching on sexuality, everybody wants a free-for-all, you have no type of a world. You're not going to get it from the Catholic
you
Church.
Have no
Catholic Church talks about restraint in a world which says... Restraint is a dirty word.
One
That's
pope.
Not going to change. The next guy is going to come in is not going to be a poster boy for Hugh Hefner.
You know, the thing about that William Donahue guy, he's sort of like Pat Buchanan to me.
Kind of like Archie Bunker.
I really like that guy in a weird way because he's just so blunt and plain-spoken and doesn't care what anybody thinks. He doesn't shine or gloss up his opinions for anybody. He's just this weird, bizarre,
lovable bigot.
He's just this kind of crazed, insane Irish guy who gets on television, froths and foams at the mouth every time issues of Catholicism get brought up. But, I mean, you certainly can't accuse him of misleading anybody about what his thoughts are. Speaking of which, we do have some fantastic Pat Buchanan news coming up later on, so be listening for that.
The Reverend Jerry Falwell says he's making progress, but he remains in serious condition in a hospital in Lynchburg, Virginia. Hospitalized this week after he stopped breathing. Officials say he's now recovering to the point where he can sit in an armchair. They also said...
the strenuous activity that is.
Well, the Pope's been doing that for quite some time.
He's now able to wiggle his toes.
He's also taken the call from the White House. He's been hospitalized for 13 days. Time for the real snuff watch. Comment from the Vatican yet on the death of Frank Perdue, who built a backyard egg business into one of the nation's largest poultry processors, using the folksy slogan, "It takes a tough man to make a tender chicken." He died after a brief illness at the age of 84. He was chairman of the executive committee of the board for the directors of Perdue Farms. He turned day-to-day responsibilities for running the company over to his son, Jim Perdue, in 1991. In 1971, Perdue became his company's television pitch man and was first advertised chickens by brand. His tough, folksy TV persona boosted sales from $56 million in 1970 to more than $1.2 billion in 1991.
All right, quick.
And he looked like a chicken.
Top three or four folksy personas in advertising, the American advertising world.
It's the right thing to do.
Oh, Wilford Brimley. Well done right there. I was going to say Cal Worthington.
Oh, yeah.
Cal Worthington. Do you guys have Cal Worthington up here in Oregon?
No.
Mm-mm, I haven't.
You guys, like I don't live here. You know, Cal Worthington's this guy who we saw in Washington, though. So that's weird. Is he even on anymore? Cal Worthington was this car dealer.
Based
in California, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And his thing was he was sort of this Western cowboy guy. And he had a cowboy hat, and he wore the cowboy vest and a cowboy shirt and everything, and he would stand on the lot, and he would have the mile of cars behind him, and he was sort of this weird Ross Perot crossed with Herb Tarlick kind of guy.
He wrestled tigers and wild animals.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like the total archetype of the Crazy Eddie, type of the school of car sales. And so Cal Worthington definitely had that. Tom Shane certainly has the very folksy appeal to him. But Wilford Brimley, you're right. He's very much the gold standard of that. Colonel Sanders in some bizarre circus kind of way. All right. So anyway, so the chicken guy's dead.
Also, this is one of the heroes of the younger set. Comedian Mitch Hedberg. Found dead in a New Jersey hotel room.
What a place to die. Bad place to die.
And he was only 37, and he looks like he's 67. The cause of death is not determined. Details concerning his death have yet to be released. They've been told he suffered a heart attack. The comic who bore an uncanny resemblance to Rush frontman Geddy Lee and once explained the reason why he was not a household word, that most of his fans lived in apartments, spent much of his career straddling the fine line between cult status and relatively larger stardom. Born and raised in St. Paul, Minnesota, he was known for his disheveled hippie look, his relaxed, almost sedate stage manner, and his dawdling delivery.
So, 37, a comedian, dies of a, quote, heart attack.
He is really funny. I have Mitch Hedberg on my MP3 player. I'll play it for you.
I won't poke fun because I don't know anything about him.
I actually saw him do his routine when he came through on the Comedy Central tour. He opened for Dave Attell and Louis Black.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, and it's not like I'm above comedians or something, or that I don't like them. I just, for some reason, I just don't follow comics all that much. I don't know why that is. I certainly like comedy. I have no problem with comedy, comedic movies and so forth.
Look at me, I sound all academic about it. I follow the comedic movies and so forth, and that sort of artistic realm of the spectrum of the... I don't know, stand-up comics... I think it's that so many stand-up comics are so terrible, and they're such horrible people, that I'm just not willing to wade through the chaff to get to the wheat. You know what I mean? Because most... It's like 9 times out of 10 when you sit down and watch some comic, it's like they're always bad. They're always, you know, they're always hacks. And so I think the rare comic who's really good just never come across my radar. The only time I will really be exposed to comedians is when they're in some other forum or some other venue. So if, like, Louis Black, for example, is a good example of that. I got into Louis Black because I saw him on The Daily Show. Like, have I just been flipping by? Like, here's something I will never stop to watch. I will never stop to watch just a stand-up comedy show on some network, on HBO or the Def Comedy Jam or back when MTV used to do the half-hour comedy hour. I will never just waste any of my time watching that kind of stuff. Because it's like, why not just sit there and jam a meat thermometer into your eye? It's always just going to be terrible. Dave Attell's another guy, though. Dave Attell's a really funny guy. But the only reason I got into Dave Attell is because he does Insomniac. So, you know, or if I happen to hear somebody on Loveline or something like that. But, you know, so as a result, comedy's just the one thing that I'm constantly and consistently out of touch with. I mean, I can probably name less than half a dozen big-name comics that have existed in America over the last 15 years. It's just, Aaron Geek in the City talks about how music knowledge is his kryptonite, that he has absolutely no pop culture knowledge when it comes to music. I have no knowledge of the world of comedians. Just none. Zero. I mean, it goes straight from Carlin to Kinison to Chris Rock, and that's it. And those are the only three I even know. Here's Tim Riley.
But that's the end of the Snuff Watch.
There's your Snuff Watch for Friday. Here we go. This is from our good friend Stephen Cathy. Okay, more folksy pitch. I don't know why I didn't think about this. The ultimate, just plain folks, regular guy pitch man. This is it. There's not even any debate about this. Anybody know?
No.
I'll give a clue. I won't even give you a clue. It's Tom Baudette.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I don't even know why that didn't occur to me. Tom Baudette of Motel 6, you know, and Tom Baudette is one of those guys who immediately attained such a permanent place in the American brain, what they call top-of-mind awareness, that I can't remember what Motel 6 did before Tom Baudette.
I don't think they advertised.
Maybe not. I don't know if they advertised, or if they advertised but nobody noticed, or if they didn't exist. Tom Baudette is one of those guys that is now inseparable from the product he advertises for. You know, and that whole thing of that instant classic phrase that we'll leave the light on for you. There was a time, look, I can sing you the Motel 6 jingle. That little fiddle line that plays in the background, that especially working in radio where you just hear Motel 6 commercials constantly, constantly. I used to work at a country station back in the late 80s, early 90s, man. It's like the Motel 6, it was a power on the playlist. I mean, it came up like 4 times an hour. So we've also got this Rick. Dave from Wendy's. Dave Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Thomas from Wendy's was absolutely folksy. I read his book, Dave's Way, where he talks about that. And he has that whole rags-to-riches thing, talking about working his way up. It's like he delivered grit newspaper or something as a boy. Rick, Cal Worthington is not folksy. He's insane. F. Matt with Cal Worthington's dog Spot.
This F. Matt is brought to you by Barfly Magazine.
All right. Let's see. What do we... let's get John on a cell phone. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, happy Friday.
Well, thank you. What's up with you, brother?
Hey, I bought a car from Cal Worthington.
Was he crazy?
No, but he always had his dog Spot. You know, his dog Spot was actually a tiger. You knew that.
Yeah. It's because he did. I mean, maybe folksy's the wrong way to describe him, because he was very... He didn't create the shrill, screaming, out-of-his-mind delivery. That was very much a guy in New York, and his name was Crazy Eddie, I think, and he ran an electronics store, I think, and I think he went to prison for, like, embezzlement and cocaine or something, but Crazy Eddie is the guy who created that whole, our prices are so low, they're insane, that guy, and Cal Worthington did that, and he mixed it with this weird hick Carney vibe. And I just remember seeing him all over the television, and I thought he was the greatest guy on earth when I was about 9.
He was basically a pretty smart marketeer.
Yeah, yeah.
He sold a crap load of cars. You know, and he was up in Anchorage in Seattle, but he died about 8 years ago.
Cal Worthington's dead?
He's dead.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, I think the tiger turned on him.
What? All right. Thank you. That's John on the cell phone. All right, there you go. Let's see. Here's Tim Riley, the Max 910 newsroom.
Okay, kids, gather around. Here's 19-year-old Ryan Champ, who was arrested after driving 142 miles an hour on I-205 the other day. Has an important message for all you kids.
I was going way over the speed limit, being stupid. Not trying to impress anybody or break any records, just being stupid.
All right. First of all, no one goes 142 miles an hour just like because you're not looking at the speedometer and you've got the Sammy Hagar turned up a little too loud that day. That clearly is a thing where you're trying to see how fast the car will go, and you're probably trying to impress everybody on the road with you. That's one of those things that you do because you want to see exactly how fast your Impala. But it wasn't even an Impala. It was like a Civic.
Yeah,
like something that clearly isn't designed to go that fast.
Try to drive that fast over the Morrison Bridge.
All right.
Time for the job watch.
Minimum wage! Yeah!
Here's your job watch for Friday.
Black and Asian women with bachelor's degrees earn slightly more than similarly educated white women
men. Sarah Dillon.
With 4 year degrees making more than anyone else. A white woman with a bachelor's degree typically earned nearly $37,800 in 2003, compared by nearly $43,700 for a college-educated Asian woman and $41,100 for a college-educated black woman, according to data being released Monday by the Census Bureau. Hispanic women took home slightly less at $37,600 a year. The Bureau did not say why the differences exist. Economists and sociologists suggest possible factors here. The tendency of minority women, especially blacks, to more often than not hold more than one job or work more than 40 hours a week, and the tendency of black professional women take time off to have a child or return to the workforce sooner than a white woman.
Of course, white men still earn more than everybody. So, there you go. There's your job watch.
Minimum wage!
This email says, Rick, I remember Cal Worthington, damn you, and now I've got a stupid pitch song stuck in my head.
How does that go?
Isn't that the, because she's typed out the lyrics here, but the pitch is not coming into my head. Is it to the theme of, because the lyrics of the pitch are, if you want a good car deal, I think does it go to the, if you're happy and you don't clap your hands? Is that the melody that it goes to?
I believe so, yeah.
Because it's, if you want a good car deal, go see Cal. If you want a fair car deal, go see Cal. Yeah. Anyway, now it's still, well, sorry about that. I'm not.
You know you want to.
I'm not going
to
sing the Cal Worthington jingle. That would be wrong. Especially because I've already got the damn Motel 6 thing stuck in my head.
We'll leave that on for you. That one?
Yeah, you know, that. And with the dumb hick fiddle music playing in the background. So, which is an unbelievable ad. That's got to go down as one of the most effective radio ads of all time. Because I don't.
Well, what about Tom Shane for radio ads?
I said that earlier. He's got the very folksy thing too, and he's that guy's an icon. And he's been around here forever. That does Motel 6 even do TV advertising?
No,
I don't think so. I don't. I mean, I'm not the one to weigh in into the last few years because I don't see ads anymore. But I don't even think I've ever seen them advertise on TV. It's solely a radio thing, and especially those Motel 6 guys. They advertise all over, like the Midwest. Have you ever driven through the Midwest, or you know, like long, boring stretches of Nevada? Any of those places, you hear those Motel 6 commercials everywhere because that fiddle music comes on, and it's Tom Baudet has such a warm, inviting voice. You immediately start to weep openly to yourself because you want to go. It's so lonely out here on the highway. It's so sad. I haven't seen another human for 3 days. You know, and you just want to go. Oh, I want to go stay at a Motel 6 in the sweet, warm, loving bosom of Tom Baudet. You know, it just sounds like the best place. And then you get to a Motel 6, and of course, it's, you know, it is what it is. But
I mean, you're driving through Nebraska, where all you smell if you keep your window open is Commodore in 100-degree heat. And you're happy to find a Motel 6 where you can just go and shut the door and at least breathe.
Seriously. Listening to radio stations when you're out there in like the big, wide open, boring, dull space of America. And I don't know if these still exist anymore. But
first you hear the Carpenters and then Ernest Tubb.
Totally. Well, now that we've got completely off the door, we'll talk. We'll tell this story and then we'll break. But I, like a lot of radio guys, I spent a lot of long, long, lonely hours as a child and a teen and an adult. And recently, it's just sitting there, like scanning, like the radio waves late at night, just looking for bizarre signals that come in, like with your AM dial. Your, like, I'm not one of the shortwave. Like, I have a little bit more of a life than that. I'm not one of those guys with, like, a ham, like a DXer, like with a ham radio. Like, I picked up a signal from Antarctica. You know, just one of those, or one of those guys who's in Finland, picking up our station and then sending a postcard here to get it verified by the engineer so he can impress the guys on his internet use group, his news group with it. But I have spent a lot of hours of my life sitting there late at night with an AM radio, which is when those signals go really far, is at night, looking for strange stations and voices to kind of drift in over the ether. And sometimes, depending on where you live, there are these radio networks that are like these trucking networks, where it's like, I don't know if it's nationwide or whatever, if it's a satellite network or something, but you'll hear these broadcasts where it's like these little networks that broadcast on the AM dial targeted specifically at guys who are like long-haul truckers.
It's on KSL.
Yeah, really? And they'll do, and it's like late at night, man, and they'll do endless sad country songs and then lots and lots of weather. And they always have some woman on there with an attractive voice because, you know, they know that it's some horny guy in a Peterbilt hat sitting there driving a bunch of chicken coops across the country or something. It's just some of the most fascinating radio. It really is like a window into a whole different type of America. And all there are on there is different variations on things like the Motel 6 ad. It's just, man, the whole thing there is just folksy. And then it's a guy selling you, like, trailer hitches, too. So, all right. Well, let's take a break here. We'll come back and we'll try to get... trying to get back on something approaching a track here. Still to come, Florida news, shark news. Try to get a Darwin watch in here. Scott Daly's going to be here later on to talk about Sin City. Jolie, top five worst metal songs of all time. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show right here on Max 910. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. Thank you for coming by. If you'd like to email today, it's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on, we have Florida news, Darwin Watch. We'll talk about Sin City, which opens everywhere today. And I cannot stress enough how much you really need to go see this
now,
movie.
Now, is this a movie for someone who tries to stay away from violence, not to attend? Is this a violent movie?
It is a violent film. Yeah, there was three different turns in that sentence. I didn't understand.
Oh.
Yes and no. It's a violent film in the sense that there's a lot of acts of violence done to people. It is not a film. It's not a gratuitous film. It's not a bloody film.
Like, I walked out on Saving Private Ryan.
No. It's nothing like that. No. Nothing like that at all. And it's not even like Pulp Fiction in the level of intensity. Because, you know, I'm not giving anything away. Everybody knows this is Sin City. It's a black and white film. It's a black and white film. There are, because it's kind of a pulp style story, and because it's noir, it's a very grim film, and it's a movie filled with booze and broads and bullets and dames and guns and killing and whatever. So there are moments of real violence. However, A, it's in black and white, and B, a lot of them are shown in silhouette. In other words, the more graphic moments are shown in a black and white, like a photo negative silhouette sometimes. So at no point is it the... It's a very stylized... I don't want to say cartoony, because that makes it sound a little silly, but it is a very stylized kind of violence, so it is not a Saving Private Ryan thing at all, in any way. It's very... The violence is very comic book. It's not the. It's if you're squeamish, it's not going to be a big deal. I mean, it's a pretty grim film, But it's not a gross-out
fest. Well, isn't the basis of it that there isn't any law and there isn't any good or bad? Like, it's just kind of...
Well, it's you know, Sin City, which is I mean, and I'm not purporting to be some expert on it. I mean, people know a lot more about it than I do. I mean, I read some of Frank Miller's, you know, some of the book stuff for it years ago, and, you know, when I saw the film. That's about, and I know what I've picked up from Aaron and those guys. But Sin City, which is the nickname for Basin City, which is the sort of fictitious place where this takes place, it is very much one of those, you know, one of those 40s gangster noir cities where the cops are on, you know, the cops are on the payroll, and all the villains are kind of good guys at the same time, and the good guys are kind of villains, and there's no heroes, there's just anti-heroes, and, you know, and it's just graft and corruption and whatnot. So, anyway, so then, you know, just go, you should see it.
Well, let's talk about Sin City. Clive Owen's career seems to be on the right path, just having achieved critical success for his role in Closer. The thespian is following up on that with the new flick Sin City. His love interest in Closer was Natalie Portman, and in Sin City, he's matched with Brittany Murphy. Now, in this picture, he plays Dwight, a man in love with Shelley, one of the women in Old Town. Clive shares his thoughts on the project.
I was just thrilled to be asked to be involved, yeah. Robert sent me the graphic novels and this sort of 10-minute thing that he'd already filmed, and it looked hugely exciting. I wasn't familiar with Frank's work at all, and I read the graphic novel, The Big Fat Kill, and thought it was the sort of wildest, most imaginative thing I'd come across in ages, so I was just thrilled to be asked to be involved, really.
Clive Owen's great, and he was in a great movie called Croupier a couple years ago as well that you should check out.
Clive talks about having comic creator Frank Miller working on the project.
I have to say, I think this guy is a genius. I was blown away by it. And
likewise.
I think mm-hmm. that, you know, it's like that world. I felt at the end of that movie like I'd been taken to some extraordinary place I'd never been before. And I think that Frank's vision and world is that, and this guy has just gone and created it on film.
So someone breathing in the background of
that was Brittany Murphy.
Brittany Murphy.
Yeah.
Brittany Murphy.
Really, she sounded British. That was weird.
I mean,
this might have been done in London.
I dig her though, and I know many people don't. I know there's some people who don't like Brittany Murphy, and actually one of the people.
I think she's another one of those people. That everyone kind of hates for no specific reason.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
I like her.
I mean, I like
Little
her.
Little Black Books, tell her movie.
And she's trashy, which is why I like her. She's got that trashy, slutty, hot thing going on.
Anorexic.
And she's not anorexic.
Did you see her in Clueless and then see her in 8 Mile?
Don't talk that way about my Brittany.
Oh, come on.
No, she is.
You can take her out for a really cheap date.
No, she's not. It's not that she's... it's a terrible thing to say. Just bring along the tube.
I didn't say that.
No, you know what I'm talking about. No, you know what? She does have that look. See, because anorexic isn't the word I would go for. I would go for that junky look, which is not typically a thing that I go for. It's like, you know what it is? It's like Juliette Lewis is the same way. Where Juliette Lewis, I mean, she doesn't have a body type at all that I would typically be interested in, but it's just that she looks so trashy and, like, worn out and slutty that it kind of goes around the corner and becomes hot again somehow. Now, one of the people who went with us on Tuesday thought that didn't care for Brittany Murphy in this film, and I thought she was really good. I liked it. The only real weak spot in this film to me is Alexis Bledel from the Gilmore Girls, which pains me to say. She plays Rory in the Gilmore Girls. Now, you know, I love her to death. She's great on that show. She's kind of a clank spot in Sin City for me. But it's a minor complaint.
Well, let's talk more about Behind the Camera, the unauthorized story of Mork and Mindy, which is on the TV next Monday night. Erin Haynes plays Pam Dubar, and she talks about the relationship between Pam and Robin Williams.
In the script, it really tries to show their relationship as being a very loving, nurturing one. She kind of played the older sister to him and was very concerned when his life was going downhill and when he was involved in unhealthy activities, you know. So she seemed to be the one that the producers or the director would say, "Hey, Pam, will you go talk to Robin?" So they have her, they have a couple scenes of me going to talk to him and really kind of be the one that says, "Hey, what's going on here?" Which maybe some other people didn't feel comfortable doing. They had that kind of loving, sweet relationship.
First of all, that's code for coked out of his brain. Secondly, no one cares. No one's going to be watching this movie. No one on earth is going to be watching the behind-the-scenes story of Mork and Mindy.
You are so obsessed with this.
I'm only obsessed with the notion that they think it's going to be... I mean, look, maybe... I don't know nothing about television, so maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe it's going to be something that I'm proven to
never
be correct on.
Never underestimate the taste of the American public.
It really is true. As I think P.T. Barnum once said, that you will never go broke. You will never go broke assuming that the public is stupid. So, look, maybe they focus grouped it, and there's some huge untapped reservoir of Mark and Mindy love out there. But I'm thinking that's not the case. What do I know?
Well, Aaron talks about Chris Diamantopoulos' portrayal of Robin Williams.
Chris does the most amazing job. I was nervous a little bit coming on, going, well, this whole project hinges on his performance and his ability to capture the essence of Robin Williams. And I think that he's amazing, and it's been really fun to do scenes with him, especially kind of the Mork and Mindy scenes that people are more familiar with, because that's the lighthearted, like,
wacky,
having a good time scenes. And it's been really fun. I've been having a good time.
I wonder if we could capture his essence in a jar and then destroy it somewhere. You know what I mean? Like capturing someone, like capturing Angel's soul and then storing it in a spirit vessel. I didn't just say that. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, there's a severe catfight going on the IMA show between prim and proper MSNBC newsreader Contessa Brewer and tough Jersey broad and traffic babe Tracy Burgess.
Is this the, what, Tracy Burgess, is she the young girl?
No, she's older and more earthy.
Is what is that code for?
Your typical horse face radio woman. Usually it is, but not in the case, of course, of our Sarah Dillon.
No, of course not.
Who has a face more for television.
Yes, it's true. But is Contessa the young... Because there was a thing happening on the IMA show a while back. There was some sort of dynamic where there was... Maybe she was an intern, though, where there was some hot, like, 20-something intern.
Oh, no, you're thinking of something else entirely. Traffic babe Tracy Burgess has been there for a long time.
All right. Because I only hear like about 20 minutes of the IMA show every day. So, but you know the thing I'm talking about that was like last year where there was the young girl and the old girl thing.
Yep.
Okay. But this is
totally different because Contessa Brewer just started on the show itself reading right across from IMAs at the new studio.
All right. Which I still haven't seen. See, that's the other thing. I guess I got to tape it because I still haven't seen the MSNBC, the telecast of his show since he moved to the new studio.
I watch it while I'm eating breakfast around 2:45 every morning.
All right. Okay.
As most people do, I'm sure.
All right. So this is a little cat fight. Okay.
This is started by traffic babe Tracy Burgess.
Did have an ugly moment here earlier when Tracy Burgess, who is our, does the traffic on the program, she's our news anchor and news editor, took it upon herself to disparage poor little Contessa and Contessa's ability to read news on the radio.
Right.
Maybe you want to direct your comments directly to Contessa, Tracy.
Hey, Contessa, how are you this morning?
Hello, Tracy.
How's that reading going, girlfriend? How many radio stations have you worked at?
We don't need a resume about how many radio stations she's worked at.
Well,
by the way, you don't need the at.
If you're talking to 14 million listeners and 50,000 viewers, what do you think the priority should be?
I don't know, Tracy, actually. We've never met.
No, that's not the question, Contessa. If it's not on a screen, can you read it?
This is totally unnecessary, Tracy. You are a vicious beast.
I'm sorry.
You're a horrible beast.
That's fantastic.
We got more. We're just getting going here. Then, next on the show, the hair and makeup gals march out onto the stage defending the anchor woman.
Essa doesn't use any makeup. You, on the other hand, could use some makeup.
Did you hear that, Tracy?
I say that a half dozen women have to get Contessa ready for her close-up.
Doesn't use a half a dozen women.
I say six people get offended. This is the most makeup people I've seen since Tammy Faye went out on her
Oh, fantastic.
So, Tracy Burgess, who has a face for radio,
she's an earthy woman.
She's an earthy one.
Man, I could do an hour on that right now. women in radio. Because look, because here's the thing. Because everybody knows that men in radio are hideous. That's the thing. It's like, that's why I can talk. That's why I could spend a whole lot of time riffing on women in radio. Because it's already been established that if you're a man in radio, it's because you're hideous. I mean, like women who call up Tom and go, Tom, I've seen you and you're fat and ugly and bald. And so he's just like, why do you think he's on the radio? That's why you go on the radio, because people cower at the sight of you in public.
And you sit behind closed doors and nobody can see you.
And every radio guy has had this so much so that it's a cliche, where you meet the radio guy and you're like, oh, I thought I thought you'd be different looking. You know, it's like there was...
I can't wait to wash my hands.
You're like pulling your children to your side. Don't talk to him.
I'm not handling food after this.
when you hear Steve Taylor's golden voice on KGON, and you're like, I can't wait to meet that Steve Taylor. I bet he's a real sex bot, you know?
Well, here's the
I'm not excluding myself from that. I'm sure that there's people who go, I can't wait to meet that Rick Emerson. I'm sure he's really attractive. You know, that's like I'm like a bad Richard Belzer.
I always get drunk girls at listener parties come up to me going, I didn't know that's what Rick looked like. And they usually think that you look pretty good.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
Their opinion changes from the beginning to the end of the night after a few libations.
Yeah, they say that
libations.
The end of the evening after several kamikazes, that's fine. They're trying to mask their horror at it. So guys in radio, I mean, they're all terrible. I mean, we don't even want to get into this game. I was about to open my mouth and ask if there's anybody really, you know, if there are any really, you know, like good-looking guys in this building. But you know what? We don't want to start that. We don't want to start singling people in this building out for scorn or praise, because that's going to end badly. But all I'm saying is the men in radio are hideous, and women are usually pretty earthy. Okay.
Rick, our building is made up of nothing but beautiful men and women.
Okay. As Kyle would say, a whole bunch of women look like they were beaten with a bag of nickels.
Here's Tim Riley. So here's the final thing here with Tracy Burgess.
Back to the bar, sweetheart. Take another shot at tequila, another drag on that cigarette, and get the...
Oh, did that cut off?
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, it's still playing.
Oh, that's too bad.
No.
Oh, that's too bad.
Go back to the bar, sweetheart. Take another shot at tequila, another drag on that cigarette, and get the Botox out, because you need it.
Oh, Botox.
Oh, you need the Botox.
That one, that
face.
You just would talk.
Yeah. What did you say to me? What are you, 80?
He wasn't 80. He's older than you.
Damn. Well,
wow.
All right, then.
Boy. So was that the sassy makeup artist?
Yeah, this show was a hotbed of civility compared to that.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right, well, there you go. By the way, you're listening to KHK Vancouver, Portland, KSLM, Salem, an intercom station. Boy, that's sad. I remember one time, though, this is when I was young enough to still be surprised by such things. There was a radio station. It was not in Portland. It actually was in a different city. But there was a radio station when I was in my late teens. And this is that after I already worked in radio for a while, but I hadn't yet become aware of the universality of such things. And there was a woman. We'll call her Veronica, not her real name. Because I don't want to disparage anybody. But there was a woman, a female DJ named Veronica. And she had a late night show. And it wasn't like a Love Notes type program. It wasn't one of those, you know, you're listening to Dedication, you know, whatever, that all cities. She was just a normal DJ, but she did have one of the sexiest voices I've ever heard in my life. And she did it without being like a sex kitten. She didn't do that whole, she wasn't the typical cliche breathy female DJ. She just had a really beautiful voice. And man, I remember I went by the station one time to drop off a resume because I was trying to get a gig like anywhere I could. Stop at the station, and she was just coming in for her shift. And it's like you're thinking, like, are you here to scrub the restrooms? You know? And then it's like I see you pulling the headphones out of the bag, and she turns to the secretary and goes, and it's just like this horrible, horrible. I mean. Like acres and acres of rolling pink flab, and you know, and like a bad Dawn of the Dead style face, and frizzy hair, and wearing like a big Minnie Mouse sweatshirt, you know, and then she turns to reception, and goes, "Do I have any messages?" You know, and you're, and then suddenly your brain, it's like it does the big Spielberg camera pullback, you know, you're looking at the sky, going, "Con!" And you're just horrified. To suddenly have the juxtaposition of, like, the hottest voice you've ever heard with this thing walking into the radio station ahead of you. Again, and I'm not trying to single out women for this, but it's well known that men are horrible. I'm just saying it's not limited to men. So, hey, speaking of terrible photos, by the way.
Yes.
We have in our possession what looks to be the single, and I know that I've made this statement before, but this looks to be the single worst picture ever taken of Britney Spears. And Tim, I'm going to show
it
to you.
It has to be true.
Hold on. I can't figure if it's real or not. Now, I'm going to hit enter. Mm-hmm. Now, Tim, I'm going to hit enter, and the picture will appear on your screen.
All right.
This picture of Britney Spears.
Oh, my word.
Doesn't she look like a zombie? Doesn't she look like she's gotten some sort of a 28 days later thing?
Wow, look going at that. Yeah. Is, she looks like a combination of Jackie Onassis and, I don't know, Tonya Harding?
Yeah, it's a bad, bad picture. Now, here's the thing. It's so bad that I don't even know if that's really her.
It has to be her. That's what she looks like now.
Well, Sarah's using the circumstantial evidence here that she's...
I've seen her wear those glasses before. God, I'm lame.
They're her glasses, and she
and
has...
And she has long, dark hair now.
Long, dark hair. She's got a sweatshirt with a pot leaf on it, which we think is something she might wear. She's got those kind of Britney nails going on. Now, here's the thing. I would like to post this picture of Britney Spears on the website, but this is where we need a little geek help here.
Yeah.
We've got this picture of Britney Spears, which is... I mean, it looks like she's developed some sort of serious motor skills deficiency, and she's sort of... Like, she's not really able to hold her torso up correctly, and it's sort of lurching forward a good foot before the rest of her gets there. So, here's the problem with this photo, though. This photo, we don't know where it came from, right? You just saw this. This
no.
is the wallpaper on
Somebody
your computer,
Somebody just put
right?
it on this wallpaper, yeah.
Okay, this is the wallpaper on Sarah's computer. Now, we don't know where the actual JPEG is, though. So, if you're a geek, here's what we need to know. We're running, Windows 2000. Now, this Britney picture is Sarah's desktop wallpaper. The question is, where is that file stored on the PC? So if you know the answer to that, you just call 503-535-9100. You let us know about that. Because we want to post this picture on the weblog, but somebody else is the one who... Somebody else made the photograph the wallpaper. And so as a result... We don't have the actual file. I just don't know Windows well enough. I don't know where that file is stored. So you let us know. We'll get that up here. Here's Tim Riley in the Max 910 newsroom.
Well, Miss Wheelchair Wisconsin has been stripped of her title because pageant officials say she can stand to the point that a newspaper sent a picture of it.
This is the best story ever. Where she won. Is it Miss Wheelchair or Ms. Wheelchair?
Ms. Wheelchair.
Ms. Wheelchair Wisconsin, and then the photograph appears of her standing up somewhere.
Let's see here. She has muscular dystrophy and uses a scooter. The photos were snapped by the Post Crescent newspaper.
Who stalks a woman with muscular dystrophy hoping to expose her with a picture that she's able to stand up occasionally?
I've been made to feel that I can't represent the disabled citizens of Wisconsin because I'm not disabled enough, said she. She planned to go to the national pageant with her younger sister who also has muscular dystrophy and won the competition in Minnesota. Students at Kukanana High School...
Are they going to do like a hot calendar or something at some point?
They raised $1,000 for a trip to the national pageant. Candidates for the crown have to, quote, mostly be seen in public using their wheelchairs or scooters, unquote, said Judith Hoyt, Miss Wheelchair America treasurer. Otherwise, you've got women who are in their wheelchairs all the time, and they get offended if they see somebody standing up. We can't have the title holders walking around where they're seen in public.
Is there some... How do they test to see if you're, like, really, truly confined to your wheelchair? Is that a thing where they, like... I mean,
I don't know.
They start wheeling you towards a hill or something and see if you get out of the chair? Like, you must be at least this tall to enter this... Oh, wait, do we have somebody who can help us out with this? All right, hi, Winter, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
I should be on your default directory at your Windows installation there, buddy.
All right, so, now, but the problem... Here's the problem, though, is that... Because we're talking about this Britney Spears picture, which exists right now only as wallpaper on Sarah's PC, because she's not the one who made the Britney picture into the wallpaper, we don't know what the picture's going to be named. You know what I'm saying? We don't know the file name.
All righty, and if you right-click on your desktop there and go to Properties,
yeah,
and then click on Desktop there, it should give you a name of the file.
All right, Kyle, so let's right-click on your desktop, go to Properties.
That's what I just did.
Okay.
It says Internet Explorer wallpaper. That's what it's labeled as.
Yeah, but it doesn't actually give the file name.
It doesn't give the file name.
It's all very confusing.
Let's see. You should be able to pull up the default Internet Explorer wallpaper out of your Windows directory there as well.
Okay. All right. Well, during the next break, we'll see if we can get... Because you have to see this photograph. It's fantastic. So, all right. Thank you, Winter.
Sounds good, buddy.
All right. There you go. Here's Tim Riley in the Max 910 newsroom.
From Kalamazoo comes word, Pat Buchanan cut short an appearance after an opponent of his conservative views doused him with salad dressing. Stop the bigotry, the demonstrator shouted as he hurled the liquid last night during a program at Western Michigan University. The incident came just 2 days after another noted conservative, William Kristol, was struck by a pie during an appearance at a college in Indiana.
Yeah, it was like a peach cobbler pie he got hit with.
Well, after he was hit, Buchanan cut short his question and answer session with the audience saying, "Thank you all for coming. Now I'm going to have to go get my hair washed."
Now, there is a video clip out there of Buchanan being hit with salad dressing. I wasn't able to download it this morning, but somebody did send me what purports to be a video clip of the salad dressing hitting Pat Buchanan.
The demonstrator, identified by authorities as a 24-year-old student at Kalamazoo Valley Community College. Why is Pat Buchanan hanging around places like this?
Kalamazoo.
What do you do in Kalamazoo after you go to the community college?
Needs to get a better guest booker.
Well, he was arrested and faces a misdemeanor charge of disturbing the peace, released a $100 bond. Buchanan's visit had evoked controversy on campus because it fell on the birthday of the late Mexican-American leader Cesar Chavez. Buchanan favors tighter controls on immigration. William Kristol, the editor of the influential conservative magazine The Weekly Standard and former chief of staff to Vice President Dan Quayle, was splattered by a student during a speech at Earthorn College in Indiana. Only small towns. And, well, that's about it for that. Oh,
there you go. All right. It's 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. We'll do a Darwin watch here before we end this. We'll do some Florida news. Do you have that DJ story
I handed you?
This is fantastic. Speaking of radio stories.
An Indianapolis man who posed as a disc jockey and tricked men into disrobing was convicted Wednesday of 6 felonies. Prosecutors say Richard C. Brown lured 3 men to his East Side home in July 2004 by claiming they could win $50,000 cash or a car as part of KNOU-FM's contest. At the time, Brown was under house arrest for criminal confinement after police say he posed as a sheriff's deputy in May 2002 and humiliated a 21-year-old man. In the radio hoax, the men were instructed to strip, then leave wearing only a small T-shirt. 2 men agreed, disrobing in front of Brown. The 3rd victim noticed Brown's home detention ankle bracelet. That's his home detention ankle bracelet.
Which doesn't really preclude him from being in radio, though,
right.
It should be noted.
Mm-hmm.
There's numerous Portland stations where he'd fit right in with that.
I mean, some of these board ops we have had. he left home and contacted the radio station.
Excellent. Good times for everyone. All right. So have we made any progress? Should I just come over during the... I'll come over during the break, maybe look for the Britney thing?
Yeah, I bet we can get it up during the break.
All right, okay. Excellent. Here's Tim Riley.
Here's a Darwin watch.
Here's your Darwin watch.
I ate all my cap. My parents won't let me use scissors.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Uh-oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
A 31-year-old man who drowned in 8 inches of water became overcome by fumes while painting indoors with all the windows shut. It can happen. Michael Forby of Atlantic City died last weekend while painting an indoor swimming pool. They do not consider his death to be suspicious.
You need these windows open? No, I'm fine. You just leave me here.
He was applying rubberized swimming pool paint at the home of another man who was helping him. The man left his home to take a little dinner break Saturday night and returned to find Formby face down in the pool. It probably should have been better ventilated, said Lieutenant Hamburg.
Do you think? It's like that story we had. I was a while back with the family. Set up a bunch of bug bombs in their house and then decided just to hang out and make some fish sticks or whatever and watch TV while they were doing their work. That's not a thing you want to do. Even I know that. There's your Darwin watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Go, go, go. I ate all my cap. Go, go, go. My parents won't let me use scissors.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Damn. Uh-oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Well, let's see what's on the TV tonight on Biography. The first one is Tom Selleck, More Than Magnum. The second one is John Stamos.
The best part of the John Stamos thing is the description, which I think just says...
He becomes well-known.
There you go. There's the totality of John Stamos' life. By the way, I saw The Office last night.
And?
I finally was able to...
And?
I don't know, man. You know, that...
It still seems like they're trying to do a sitcom.
That, it really is true.
Like they're acting.
It's so hard, though, because I don't... I desperately want to like the show. I really want to like it. I want it to be good. And it's tempting to say, when we're talking about the American version of The Office, the NBC version, which is the adaptation of the British sitcom, it's tempting to say, well, look, there are only two episodes in, give them time. But on the other hand, all they basically have to do is replicate something that they've seen for a couple years on the BBC. I mean, it's not like they're having to create something from scratch. So it's still better than almost everything else on NBC. It's still better than almost every sitcom that's not Arrested Development. And there are moments that are really funny. There are moments that are really funny, when they're doing the diversity seminar and Steve Carell kicks the guy out and he says, this is a place of welcoming, so get the hell out. That I laughed out loud at that.
Yeah, that was funny.
I laughed out loud at that, and there were the moment when the Indian woman has to get up and leave the room to take a phone call, and he says, well, you can't leave because then we'll only have two. Ah, you know, that was funny. But it's like they're just trying too hard. I mean, the thing with the British version of The Office is it's very subtle. It's very understated in that there's nothing that happens in that British version of The Office that you can't see happening probably where you work. I mean, no matter what kind of office you work in, all that stuff that happens in the British sitcom, you could see taking place. Whereas the American one, it's like they can't resist that American impulse to make this sitcom over the top and to overreach and to make it just absurd beyond the point of all reality. All of which I would forgive, because the rest of the cast is really good, including that guy who plays the Gareth character, that guy who is Arthur on Six Feet Under. He's really great, and he does play the sort of the great archetypal, like, stupid, angry, young idiot white office worker. But that guy who plays the David Brent character, whatever, I can't even remember his name. Steve Carell, though, he's just not good.
He doesn't look like the character.
He doesn't look like the character, and he's too over the top with it.
Sitcom-y.
Yeah, that it does seem like a sitcom, and that's the thing about David Brent, is that David Brent, as portrayed by Ricky Gervais, he's so calm about it, and so matter of fact, and Steve Carell is too zany. That's the problem with it. He's too zany with the character, and he does what one of a this is a screenwriting book that Joan and I were going through for something the other day. We were looking up some, we had a question about something we were doing or whatever. But the guy talks about chasing the joke, you know, where it's one thing to just make the joke and it's another thing to really chase the joke. And he chases the joke. That's the problem. And it's just, you know, and it just ends up being a little too intense comedy wise. So.
And I noticed when I was fast forwarding, it seems to have too many commercials in it as compared to a regular half-hour show.
Well, you know, I think it only has the one commercial break, but it's like 6.5 minutes long or something.
Maybe
I
mean, that's why the show seems short for some reason.
With the TiVo, it's hard to tell exactly how long a commercial break is. Really, the only way you can tell with the TiVo is by counting how many times you have to press the 30-second skip button. And I'm pretty sure I pressed the 30-second skip button 4 times. No, it would have been more than that. Well, whatever. But it tallied out of my head to be something like 6 minutes of commercials, which is a long-ass commercial break. I mean, especially on television, and especially for a sitcom audience. You can't get away with that anymore. I mean, television audiences just will not sit still. Not when they got a remote control in the hand, and they got the internet, and they got the DVD, and they got all of that stuff, and they got TiVo. They're not going to sit still for 6 minutes of commercials halfway through some sitcom that's, you know. They're on to something with that. You know, when Letterman does those occasional shows without commercials where the whole show is sponsored by somebody or other, and they just do a musical interlude or something, that's what television's going to have to do. They're never going to keep listeners, viewers doing it the way they're doing it now, you know, with that. It's just not going to work. Here's Tim Riley.
So that's it, except for Kingpin.
Kingpin with Bill Murray. In one of Bill Murray's finest performances, it's also got Randy Quaid and Woody Harrelson, blah, blah, blah. But that movie's all about Bill Murray and his bad bowling ball with the rose inside and his horrible toupee. That entire film is all about him.
And some animal show, Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
That's it.
All right. Let's do one more here, and then we'll break, and we'll come back with some other crap.
This comes to us from Florida.
Excellent.
Florida Fish and Wildlife investigators have tried to determine how a Melbourne man was bitten by one of the world's most deadly snakes, a black mamba, inside his home. The man was rushed to the hospital, given 10 vials of anti-venom over the weekend after the black mamba bite. His condition not available at this time. They learned that the victim's roommate had a permit to handle poisonous snakes. The black mamba is a native to Africa and can grow up to 14 feet long. They're among the fastest and most deadly snakes in the world.
Kyle's totally shake. You've got that snakeophobia, whatever the hell that's called, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even so, little gardener snakes.
Didn't you say that Sarah was just pointing out the black mamba was Uma Thurman's code name in the... It was one of the divas.
In Kill Bill.
In Kill Bill. All right. Well, let's take a break here. Around the corner, we'll a little catch-up. We'll do some of the leftovers from this week. We've got this R. Kelly song that I can't believe is real. And it is. And it's a... Kyle, you know the song I'm talking about? The kitchen song?
No, I haven't heard it. I don't like R. Kelly at all.
No one likes R. Kelly. I mean, I don't understand exactly who it is that's still buying his records, although clearly some group of people exists that thinks he's the bee's knees or whatever. But it really is the most ludicrous song I've heard in quite some time. So we got that. Scott Daly's going to be here talking about Sin City from filmfever.org.
Found that picture.
Top five worst... Oh, really? And then you found the Britney picture?
Yep.
Fantastic. And top five worst metal songs of all time. It's all coming up. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Stay there.